Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Weathering the Storm. I'm joined by our curation editor, Stephanie Fagnani, and John Porter, senior vice president and chief meteorologist at AccuWeather. We'll be discussing mitigation steps that local government entities can take to improve their resilience to these vast climate changes that we're seeing. Stephanie, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Paul.
And John, welcome to the podcast for the first time. And first thing, John, I want to say is I think it's appropriate to have you on now, being that we're in hurricane season and being that we've had to reschedule, unfortunately, a number of times because you've been involved in quite a few different events, weather-related events that have happened.
Yeah, Paul, that's a great point. It's great to be with you. Thanks for the invitation. And we have had to make some schedule changes because of several recent severe weather events. And this is such an important topic that we're going to be hitting on today, because the severe weather impacts that communities and businesses and governments are dealing with all across the country are increasing in frequency and impact, and resilience is really the key here going forward in a changing climate.
Well, John, being you just mentioned frequency, that's one of the first things I wanted to ask you about. The time period between billion-dollar disasters, have you seen that shrink compared to maybe a decade ago? And a follow-up question to that is, are these storms happening more frequently at times during the year when they normally aren't expected to happen?
Those are two great points because they set the context of this discussion and they showcase why it is so important. And I've been an AccuWeather meteorologist for 21 years. And one of the things I could tell you is that obviously we're on the front lines of best communicating forecasts and warnings with proven superior accuracy to people and businesses and governments all around the country and all around the world. And we have seen the increased frequency and impact of natural disasters, from wildfires to hurricanes to tornado impacts to flash flooding events, each with different accelerations in frequency and impact. But across the board, we've seen major increases in the frequency and also the impact of severe weather events. And by the numbers, you look at the number of billion-dollar disasters back in the 1980s, and you adjust that for inflation to what we see today, you look back into the 1980s and the time difference between, or the average gap between billion-dollar disasters in the 1980s was 82 days. In recent years, that's fallen to just 18 days. Now, the second part of your question is also a very good one, because we have seen that natural disasters don't run on any kind of a calendar, and increasingly so in recent decades, where severe weather events are happening at places and times of the year that are catching people that are unprepared or not aware of that threat off guard. And that is a major issue. And that's another reason that we're always stressing that people be aware of the AccuWeather forecast, know what the risks are in their community. And just because the calendar might not say that a particular risk occurs typically on average at that time of the year, people always need to be aware of the risks that AccuWeather meteorologists are highlighting and have the plans in order to be able to react to that. One of many examples of that is the tragic December 2021 tornado outbreak across the central part of the United States. In mid-December, two different days where there were multiple tornadoes, deadly tornadoes, first across parts of Illinois, Missouri, and of course, Kentucky, Mayfield, Kentucky, and surrounding areas. And then later that same week, further north across parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin in mid-December. That's a time of the year that many times in those areas, people are thinking about snow concerns. But instead of that, in 2021, driven by a plume of warm, moist air from the Gulf being driven north, a very warm Gulf, that created a scenario, as well as a very strong jet stream disturbance that created a tornado outbreak in December in the central part of the United States. That's one of many such examples. Of course, here at AccuWeather, we were highlighting that at days ahead of other sources so that people and businesses could be best prepared for a dangerous tornado outbreak. And we amplified our messaging because we knew it was at a time of the year where people might not be expecting that. And so those kinds of severe weather events are happening outside of the times of the year that people might expect them at increasing frequency. So again, that's very important to know the risks that are going to be occurring in your community in the coming days and be prepared.
John, we've spoken a couple of times, and I think I told you this before. You're definitely killing my high here, John, with because you bring a lot of grim news. I'm going to remember that 18-day number for a while.
Yeah.
But I realize you're just stating the facts. It's not you personally. I had a question around with storms. For example, with Asheville, North Carolina, we've seen these storms move further inland than ever before. What's driving this dynamic?
Well, I think, you look back at climatology of tropical storms and hurricanes, and there has always been, it's part of the climatology that those storms will move. Oftentimes, they may make landfall along the Gulf Coast or along the Atlantic Coast and then move inland. And they produce oftentimes well inland, sometimes 1,000 or more miles away from where a tropical storm or hurricane makes landfall. Devastating and deadly flash flooding can occur. We've seen that for decades. You look back into the 1970s in terms of the impacts from Hurricane Agnes across eastern Pennsylvania, where there was catastrophic, devastating flooding in places like Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and Scranton, Pennsylvania, and other parts of northeastern Pennsylvania. That was one of the events that AccuWeather had back in the 1970s had been first to alert people about those risks from Agnes and other storms as well, producing many devastating catastrophic flash floods, especially in places of terrain, in steep mountain terrain across the Appalachians and even up into northern New England. So that's always been part of the climatology of how tropical storms and hurricanes and the threats that they can pose, that inland flood threat. I think, Paul, one of the reasons that you hear about it more often now is obviously there are more reports in a connected world, in a social media world. There are reports that things can happen in places and we hear about them in the matter of minutes or in the matter of seconds. And there's more attention now across the entire weather community is really stressed that hurricanes and tropical storms are not just a threat at the coast. They are many times a threat well inland. So that threat is, I think, more widely communicated now in today's modern world. And so you see more awareness of that, although that has, as I mentioned, always been a part of tropical storm and hurricane climatology. Now, I will tell you, I think another amplifying factor has been the climate change factor as it relates to heavy rainfall events. And when you look at the frequency of heavy rain events, it's a slam dunk in terms of the impact as it relates to global warming. A warmer atmosphere promotes higher levels of water vapor. It promotes higher values of moisture near the ground and in the atmosphere. And what that results in is a greater likelihood for flash flooding events, these situations where a storm may have produced heavy rain without a warming atmosphere, but the effects are that much worse, perhaps 15 or 20% worse in terms of the rainfall rates or the rainfall amounts as it's driven by our warming atmosphere. So the global climate change or the global warming factor added on top of that, it doesn't cause an event like Hurricane Helene's devastating flooding, but it amplifies the risk for that to occur. And I think that's a factor in many of these storms as well. Just look at back at what happened in the last hurricane season. Obviously, Helene was the catastrophic flooding disaster across the southern Appalachians that resulted in so much destruction and so much devastation, so many lives lost and changed forever in the matter of a few moments in some cases. There were many other storms that resulted in significant flooding. Look at Hurricane Debbie that made landfall in the Florida Panhandle. That storm produced a catastrophic flash flood in some communities across northern Pennsylvania days later. Some communities in the northern tier of Pennsylvania were destroyed by that flash flooding. And there was very serious damage. And then Beryl, which of course made so many headlines because of its destruction along the Texas coast and in the Houston metro area, which the damaging winds there resulted in widespread power outages that were lasting for days. Of course, there was significant mismanagement of that situation by local officials and by the utilities that were involved in the Houston area. But that storm, as AccuWeather warned, later went on days later to produce catastrophic flooding across parts of Vermont and New Hampshire. So the inland flood threat, that's always been there with tropical storms and hurricanes if they move well as they move inland across parts of the eastern United States, especially. But the risk for that devastating flash flooding has been amplified in recent years. And of course, you have to remember, look back at what happened with tropical rainstorm Ida in 2021 with the devastating flooding, the tragic flooding that cost almost 100 lives in the corridor from New York City, Long Island, down toward eastern Pennsylvania, including the Philadelphia area, where major metro areas had the worst flash flooding disaster in modern history.
So you just talked a little bit about how the differing climate has impacted some of the recent storms. Are there any characteristics within these storms themselves that are changing that stand out to you?
When you look at the factors that are involved, it many times are what are the climate change factors that are amplifying certain aspects of storms and resulting in increased magnitude of impacts. Some of those factors you look at, one of them is the propensity for lots of ocean water to be much warmer than historic average over recent years. A reason for that is that when you look at the Earth system, obviously we've had a warming atmosphere for many decades, and that warming we know has been accelerated in recent decades. It's been accelerated by several factors. Of course, obviously the human aspect of burning increased fossil fuels and the increased concentration of greenhouse gases has been a major factor where humans have been impacting that warming and resulting in that acceleration. And obviously, one of the things that we've seen, as I mentioned, is obviously the warming of the atmosphere. But one of the places that the Earth system stores some of that excess heat is in the oceans. And when you look at the oceans around the globe, in the last several years, there has been a tendency for the oceans to be running many degrees above the long-term historic average. And that warm water presents many different types of problems. When you're talking about the hurricane season, warm water can result, if the atmospheric conditions are correct, it can result in rapid intensification of storms, where storms gain wind intensity very quickly. And that can sometimes happen close to the coastline. That's one of the things we saw with Hurricane Ian a couple of years ago across that, of course, had devastating impacts across Southwest Florida, where the storm gained significant wind intensity over the matter of several hours. And when that happens, obviously the winds are stronger. That creates a risk for even greater destruction from the wind, but it also results in greater impacts from storm surge, and it can also result in greater rainfall amounts, can lead to more flooding concerns. So there's that feedback loop there that amplifies the impacts as it relates to that warm water. Now, another problem with that warm water is that storms have been able to tap warm, moist air that is associated with that warm water. When air dwells over that water for an extended time period of time, it takes on the characteristics of that water. So greater levels of warmth, greater levels of moisture in the atmosphere. And we've seen those plumes of warm, moist air being drawn well north. I mentioned the central U.S. December 2021 tornado outbreak, but we've seen tornado outbreaks in November a couple years ago across parts of the eastern United States. Another stream of warm, moist air that was drawn north and from the Atlantic Ocean. They're responsible for increasing the risk for tornadoes in that situation. So we're seeing that atmospheric storms are able to draw in some of those, their characteristics are being amplified by some of those climate change factors. And that's another reason that we've seen increased impacts in recent years.
So John, the heart of our coverage here at Detwire Municipals are infrastructure projects that are capital intensive, that take years to build and they're financed over, let's say, a 30-year period. And I wanted to get your sense from a meteorologist's perspective in terms of the magnitude of the physical damage caused by wind versus flooding. Is it the same? Is it different? What makes it different, et cetera?
Well, that's a good question, and there's no easy button on that answer. It actually depends on every storm, and that's one of the things that we stress here at AccuWeather is that every storm has it's sort of its own DNA in the sense of understanding what impacts are going to be most significant from that storm, and it can vary in different places along the storm's path. We'll just take a hurricane, for example. It can make landfall along the Gulf Coast, and that could be mainly a storm surge and destructive wind threat at the coast. But then as it moves inland, like Hurricane Ida did, it becomes loses wind intensity, but it's still a threat. That's why we never say that the storm weakens. It loses wind intensity and moves inland, but it can sometimes amplify, oftentimes does amplify the flooding concern as a storm moves inland, moves north, sometimes merges with another storm system that might be in the jet stream, crossing from the Great Lakes into the northeastern United States, for example, and then reamplifies the flooding impacts in those cases. So the threats can be very different that each storm poses in different communities. Sometimes it is the wind, sometimes it is the flooding, sometimes it's the storm surge, that coastal inundation that happens from tropical storms and hurricanes right near the coast and in all those bays and inlets along the coastal areas. And one of the things we spend a lot of time at here at AccuWeather is communicating both to businesses and governments that are our customers, and we provide the most accurate forecasts and warnings tailored to their specific needs and their specific operating areas and their specific jurisdictions. We highlight what are the risks that we are most concerned about with this storm in your community so that our customers can make the best decisions. Of course, we do that for our customers that are enterprise customers and also our government customers, but we also do that for the public as well. The free AccuWeather app and AccuWeather.com, we're stressing on maps and in the forecast, the actual forecast that AccuWeather makes available on our app and on our website, we're highlighting what we think the most significant concerns are going to be in a particular community so that people can be best informed and make the best decisions. And it can vary from storm to storm, which is why I always get concerned when I hear people saying, well, I've seen that kind of situation before. Every storm is different. As financial professionals often say, past performance is not an indicator of how something can evolve in the future, right? And that same kind of disclaimer applies to the weather and weather risks as well. You never want to assume, well, I've seen that kind of a storm before. So it means that this is going to happen. It's almost like every, of course, past storms and what has occurred in the past, that provides an important background. It provides context of what types of things can occur. But just because you haven't seen an impact in a particular area, you can't write off that that's not going to happen in your community. You've got to understand with the AccuWeather forecast what the threats are in your community and be prepared to react to that. And so that's one of the reasons that AccuWeather introduced the AccuWeather Real Impact Scale for Hurricanes, which is the most comprehensive scale available to describe the total risks from a hurricane. We, of course, include the Saffir-Simpson Hurricane Wind Scale to talk about the wind impacts, but we also uniquely talk about the flooding rain threat at the coast and well inland, coastal storm surge and inundation, and also the total damage and economic loss. So it's the most holistic view of the storm risks that the storm can pose. And we've had some storms that would be barely rated on the Saffir-Simpson Hurricane Wind Scale, but there are 5 on AccuWeather's Real Impact Scale for Hurricanes to differentiate all of the threats that a tropical storm or hurricane can pose. And that's one of the many examples of you have to evaluate in each community every threat individually. What will this storm bring? And as a government leader, how can I be best prepared and ready to support my community? As a business leader, how can I keep my business operations? How can I enhance business continuity? And most importantly, keep everybody safe. And as individual people and families, how do we keep ourselves best prepared and safest? And how do we make sure our family is safe as well? And that's got to be related to watching the impacts of every storm, knowing what's happened before, but taking every impact on its own in terms of what risks may occur in those communities.
Based on everything that you're saying, John, it sounds like knowing a meteorologist is beneficial to everyday life nowadays. So, you know, we cover a lot of electric utilities here at Detwire Municipals. And I know recently Los Angeles Department of Water and Power mentioned that they are considering hiring a meteorologist on their team. I know several other utilities already have meteorology teams in place. Would you say that it's very prudent of them to have these individuals on staff? And are there any other maybe best practices you can think of that might help these utilities navigate hurricane season?
Well, utilities are in a very critical position. They are responsible for key infrastructure that sustains life. They're important beyond the life safety aspects of their operation. They're important for people's health, well-being, and their infrastructure cannot be the single point of failure that results in increased human suffering as it relates to a natural disaster. They've got to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And what we've seen in recent years, unfortunately, is that utilities have been caught unprepared, not ready, not communicating effectively, and not having the resources that are needed in order to be able to recover as quickly as needed in order to best support people and businesses in their communities. And utilities have got to be best prepared. The stakes are too high. Too much is on the line in terms of life safety, in terms of ensuring people's well-being, in terms of their reputation, and in terms of how they're helping a particular area recover from a natural disaster. And time after time again, unfortunately, utilities have not been on the right side of that particular issue. It's an opportunity for that industry to say, we've got a problem with storms and our response to storms, but there's solution. And that's why AccuWeather works with so many different utilities to help ensure that they're operating in the safest manner, that they're best prepared for storms and for other natural disasters that can impact their operations. They're ready to mobilize resources, stage them outside of the hardest impacted areas, and then move them right in after and start the restoration process after a storm impact has occurred. Utilities need AccuWeather. We've got the proven most accurate forecast. Many, many times the examples that we have in all kinds of severe weather events, from hurricanes, where we provide an average last year of 19 hours more advance notice on our first forecast for a tropical storm or hurricane as compared to the National Hurricane Center and all other known sources. The other thing I would say is that in terms of it can't be reactive. It goes back to the resiliency aspect. Paul, you made the point earlier that some of the news as it relates to natural disasters, some of the facts that I reported, they're unsettling. They're not comforting. But the news is not all bad. And there are many ways that people and businesses can mitigate those risks, be better prepared using AccuWeather, and be more resilient. And that's the call for all of us as people, business, and government leaders. We have to be more resilient. Look at the changing climate that's occurring. And it's a call for all of us to go, how can we all be more proactive? And that, again, goes back to the utilities. As it relates to the utilities, I would say there's another very important factor. They have to be better about communicating storm threats, their responses, and outage time to stakeholders, including government officials and including their customers. Look, communicating about the weather is challenging. It is not like reporting the news or sports, things that have happened, because inherently when you're talking about the weather, you're talking about what's happening in the future. Everything we talk about is a forecast, and every forecast has some degree of uncertainty. And one of the things that we work with our customers on, we've perfected here at AccuWeather over the 63 years that we've been in business, we've perfected the art and science of communication around weather. So that communication from the utilities out to their stakeholders is really critical. And we can be very helpful in that too, because we have special expertise in communicating about the weather. And I think that's another area where it ties into the resiliency. A little bit of better communication goes a long way. And I think many of the issues that you see in the aftermath of natural disasters, before, during, and after the storm, there's different messages that have to be made available by the utilities. I'm mentioning it not to be critical of any specific entity, but to say that this is an opportunity for the entire industry to recognize that better communication, working with experts at AccuWeather, can be very helpful to improving outcomes and creating greater resiliency. And I think that's the goal. We all have to confront the reality of that it has not worked well in some natural disasters. And utilities need to look at that across the board and see what steps they can take proactively to mitigate the risk of that happening to them and their stakeholders.
Well, John and Stephanie, thank you for the great discussion on building climate resilience. Shout out to our podcast producer, Anthony Phillips, who always makes sure that our mics sound right. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.